Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, Weekside Podcast listeners. I'm Jenny Frentis. I am here with Connor Orr. And after an off-season where you heard us twice a week with no football, with no preseason games, with little in-person activity, very strange off-season, we now have a week of football games to talk about. This is very refreshing. We have a full slate of topics. And yeah, I'm excited to dive in, Connor.
It was pretty surreal. I would say that after being stuck inside from March until September, the idea of sitting in one place and watching 12 hours of football has sort of lost its luster a little bit for me. Like, if there's a way to maybe watch it and go for a hike or, you know, watch it at the park, I think it would might be a little bit better, at least for a little while. That said, just to be able to bounce between stuff, to feel like there is so much going on instead of nothing going on, it was sort of a nice change of pace there. Like at the 1 o'clock games and the 4 o'clock games, a lot of stuff coming down to the last minute, a lot of storylines to follow. So it was fun. But I will say, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but some coaches made the all-mask team this weekend, Jenny, and some will be hearing from the NFL, I think.
Yeah, Troy Vincent sent a strongly worded letter reminding teams that there could be consequences if they do not show proper mask protocol, which, good for him. You know, these coaches are in prime time. They're on national TV. And we saw certainly Sean McVay on Sunday night was one of the most egregious mask protocol non-followers, I would say. You could see his lips, his nose, parts of the face that should be covered by a mask for most of the game.
Zach Taylor, two of the Bengals, maybe it's just everyone from the McVay tree that are serial mask offenders. I don't know. But and the entire Chargers staff seemed to not realize that they should just be, that they should also cover your nose. Everyone just had it on their mouth. Like it was a little comedic, but a lot of different mask styles too. Like Andy Reid went with the full shield, which I thought was very cool. But then you had some of the neck ones, you had some of the, you know, it was all over the place.
Yeah, you obviously had the fogging issue for Andy Reid, but that certainly made headlines on Thursday night. But yes, you had some N95s, some of the snoods, some of the cloth masks, a lot of different options to choose from. So that was another thing in week one that we would never have imagined paying attention to 1 year ago. The other was kind of how different crowd noise was being piped in. There was a great line from Tony Romo and Jim Nance on their broadcast, said something like, I don't know, just a sly reference to the crowd really being into something, and I thought that was pretty hilarious.
It was interesting. Like, I feel like specifically the SoFi game, the Cowboys-Rams game on Sunday Night Football, felt like unreal to me. Like, it looks like a video game, whatever the color of the field and maybe the new uniforms for the Rams and how the stadium backdrop looked. It looked like the NBA, where, you know, there were times when you look up at the TV and have a hard time just deciding whether it was real or virtual, you know, like what was actually going on. But some of it looked fine. You know, Jacksonville, you guys shouldn't have had fans anyway, but there was that raucous presence down there, and, you know, people jamming out in denim shorts and cheetah masks, and, you know, so there was at least a little bit of slice of normal football there. But just all in all, strange but comforting, but strange, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it sounded like the players were getting used to the idea that you can't really rely on crowd noise if you're playing at home as a momentum swinger. You know, if you have a big turnover or something and you hear the roar of the crowd, that can really add another element to sort of draining the momentum from the other team and really pushing things in your favor. And now you don't have that. So definitely a lot to be learned as we go along, a lot to be learned for us as well. I discovered at 1:01 p.m. that Spectrum had dropped Red Zone from whatever package I had. Promptly went on Twitter and found that others have the same issue. Could not get that added, but I found some other web service that had Red Zone, and so I hastily bought that to be able to follow along with the action. But if there's any other Spectrum subscribers, I was right there with you on Sunday afternoon, and it was impossible to add the Red Zone online because the website kept crashing. So a lot to work out. I had a beat writer friends say they were covering the game at home and realized they didn't have a flip card. You always get the flip card in the press conference, which is, or the press box, which is honestly like a very, it seems like a minor thing, but it is so helpful to have a flip card with the depth charts of both of the teams and just be able to like immediately look at a number if your mind lapses or it's a team you don't cover all the time and who's next up if someone has to rotate out or there's an injury. The flip cards are really a nice thing to have. So lots of people working out some early season logistical challenges.
No flip card, no runny eggs before the game. Like, you know, what are you going to do? And yeah, I don't know. It was weird. And I was just thinking about this, you know, as two people who are used to going somewhere every Sunday. And, you know, especially now, like following that best matchup, going to these premier matchups, some of the best games of the week, you and I getting a little banged in terms of the locals. Giants, I mean, we'll see that we're recording this at 3:11 on Monday. So the Giants make their debut tonight. Jets did not look good. I mean, the local games here, the Eagles lost. We have to buy the package, you know? We're a little bit hamstrung here. I don't think we're getting too many good local games this season.
Yeah, my options for the 1 p.m. game, if I didn't have Red Zone, were the Jets against the Bills and the Eagles against Washington.
Double yikes,
yeah. So, all right, Connor, so let's dive in. We've got a lot to talk about today. I'll start with news topic number one. Obviously, the show begins with the biggest story in the NFL, and I'm not sure I have not checked BBC or Al Jazeera recently, but maybe world news. The Jaguars stunned the universe Sunday with a 27-20 victory over the trendy Indianapolis Colts. Gardner Minshew threw for 3 touchdowns and completed 95% of his passes en route to victory. The Jaguars, as of this recording, are in sole possession of first place in the AFC South. Big news here. You can also see that Connor has returned to his rightful perch of writing the news topics every week, in case that was not obvious.
I went online and I begged Jaguars fans to take me back. I felt, I accused the team of tanking. I felt the pushback. And so I said, you know, this is just me admitting that I made a mistake. That was the most fun I've had watching a football game in a long time, probably, I mean, a calendar year. But I think what I secretly love about the Jaguars is that, you know, the tanking logic fails in that if they do poorly this season enough to get Trevor Lawrence, the GM and the coach will not be there to reap the benefits of it. It's not like a tank where you're getting a new GM, having him tank, and then allowing him to reap the benefits. So I think it's kind of cool that Dave Caldwell and Doug Marrone have essentially said, we're just going to do it our way. We're going to cut Leonard Fournette. We're going to start an undrafted college, a rookie free agent at running back for the first time in NFL history. An undrafted rookie free agent running back started week one of an NFL game. You know, the guy who sealed the game with an interception of Phillip Rivers was an undrafted free agent out of Wyoming, I think. Like, just these unheard of people, Gardner Minshew, and it was like fun. It was just a crazy game full of kind of people, not that you haven't heard of all of them, but like the Jaguars are kind of largely anonymous, but played a really inspired game on Sunday.
I have a kind of a hot take, and not to burst that bubble, and also our friend Anthony, who is a resident Jaguars fan, listener of the show, I think this game showed more about the Colts than it did about the Jaguars. And we have been kind of low on the Colts. A couple weeks ago, we were discussing this when we were, which teams would make the playoffs or would not make the playoffs or would make the playoffs that had in the past year. And we were kind of forced into a Colts pick. And I think we both said we didn't like that because mm-hmm. we did not believe that this was going to be an improved team with Philip Rivers at the head. And ultimately, neither of us ended up in our season picks picking the Colts to make the playoffs. And I think it was just, I did not have a lot of confidence that we would see an improved Philip Rivers. And perhaps there was some hope that behind a better offensive line in Indianapolis, Rivers would somehow be better, but we got the same product that we've been used to seeing. And obviously there was a late game interception, and no, one game doesn't tell the full story, but I was having a hard time getting excited about the Colts. I was having a hard time getting excited for Philip Rivers in a Colts uniform, changing kind of the results of last season. I just didn't see it happening. And week one, I think, bore that out a little bit. So my thought would be, yeah, maybe the Jaguars are not as bad as some people expected, but I definitely think the Colts are not as good.
Yeah, and what was fascinating was, I think one of the biggest flaws of Indianapolis, certainly, I mean, Philip Rivers is Philip Rivers at this age. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But also, and maybe this is partly his fault too, but just the idea that, you know, they got the matchup that they wanted. They got T.Y. Hilton on C.J. Henderson, the rookie first rounder, and they kept trying to exploit it, but C.J. Henderson was playing really well. I mean, you know, he showed that he was worthy of that ninth pick. A lot of people thought that there might have been a reach there, but at the same time, they kept going back to it and going back to it and throwing these kind of similar out routes towards the sideline, and so he jumped it. He got the pick, but then they tried that again in that final drive. When they were going down to score. And I was just surprised that Frank Reich, Nick Sirianni, you know, Philip Rivers, you thought all that brain power, that familiarity, that we'd see something kind of really different and cool. But it seemed like sort of a week three of the preseason offense, you know, like you're just kind of trying to exploit matchups. You're trying to make the right throws. And, you know, there wasn't really anything there. And all the while, you have all these upgrades at all of your skill positions. You have a high drafted rookie running back who did catch a lot of passes. You know, you have Paris Campbell, who you're finally targeting a little bit. And but it just seemed like that for some reason they could not put any of that together. Maybe that will happen over the course of the season, but you're playing the Jaguars. I mean, you know, this is probably the best opportunity you're going to have to throw some points up on the board this season.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how that storyline unfolds, what you just described about offenses. It did seem like there were a lot of offenses that you were just like, where's the creativity? Where's the mixing in of new wrinkles? Why does this look exactly like what we expected and not like some big reveal? That was
cough,
certainly not
Mike
true.
McCarthy, cough,
yes,
cough.
Exactly. So I think both of those were key examples. And is this something that will further develop as the season goes on? If there are teams that had a new head coach like the Cowboys, if there are teams that had a new quarterback like the Colts, will we see that blossom? Did they just not have enough time to put those things in place in this strange preseason offseason? Definitely something to keep an eye on, Connor.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later on. And just remind me to make the point when we talk about the Patriots that some coaches had no problem implementing
an entirely
new offense.
That's what I was referencing when I said we will get to later in the show.
But news topic number two, staying on the trendy beat, the Arizona Cardinals beat the defending NFC champion 49ers 24-20. Kyler Murray, one of two quarterbacks on Connor's fantasy team, completed 26 of 40 passes for 230 yards and a touchdown and added 91 yards on the ground for another score. I didn't start him, though. The newly acquired DeAndre Hopkins caught 14 of his 16 targets for 151 yards, which was just slightly better than the day that David Johnson had in Houston. You remember the two of them were traded for each other this offseason. Is this team for real, or did they just catch the 49ers at a bad time? And sub-question, Jenny, do you think the legion of 49ers fans who banged me for predicting that the 49ers would go 8-8 feel a little uneasy right now?
I think they should. I also had the 49ers missing the playoffs. I had the Cardinals making it. I thought there was just some residual ickiness from the Super Bowl loss. You know, the same questions about Shanahan's play calling and Shanahan's confidence in Garoppolo. And it just felt like the team picked right up where they left off, not in a good way. I mean, they had this fantastic season. They make it all the way to the Super Bowl and it ends with a dud. And the team that took the field yesterday just seemed like it hadn't really gotten over that. And, you know, again, with this strange off season, does that give you a better or worse chance of getting over a devastating loss? I don't know the answer to it, but it certainly wasn't the bounce back that I'm sure 49ers fans were hoping for. And I just don't know how you don't cover DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a mystery. But the excuses will be, well, Debo Samuel is out for three more weeks. We didn't have Brandon Ayuk. We're basically running. George Kittle got a little banged up, and so we're basically running on fumes here. But that's how a season goes. I mean, you know, that is the story of everybody's season. I think everybody has a player that they wish was in their game that isn't on opening weekend, except for, I don't know, maybe one or two teams this past weekend. But they're going to have some tough sledding here. I mean, if the Cardinals can continue to string together wins like this, look at the rest of the division. The Rams looked okay on Sunday Night Football and beat a very good Cowboys team. And the Seahawks looked as good as advertised, you know. So I think that, I don't know, if I'm the 49ers fan, I'm at least a little bit worried, leaning towards highly concerned.
I just checked our MMQB picks tracker, which, thanks to Tally Site, it has the updated records, and Vrentis has had a strong start out of the gate at 11-3, buoyed by the Cardinals pick over the 49ers. Now, you know, there's still two games tonight. We're recording this Monday afternoon. But, you know, I just was following the Connor Orr taste-making advice that the Cardinals were going to have a big season. And that was an exciting start. I don't know. I think things could get a little spicy in the NFC West. And so that game was like the perfect way to kick off an interesting division.
How did I do, by the way?
I'm not pausing because it's bad. I'm just trying to find. Okay. I'm trying to find your column. Oh, you're 9-5. Also an excellent start. People did pretty well across the board. I think the one that got everybody, yes, the Indy Jacksonville one and the Philly Washington.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
But you picked Chicago, so that was good.
Did I?
You did. Yeah.
Good for me.
One
last point in that game. I mean, Kyler Murray is looking every bit a budding star. I think that you and I could both agree in saying that while we were not thrilled with the process with which they decided to go with Kyler Murray, it ended up being the right decision. You know, I think that they could have done it a million different ways. They could have done it better from a strategic standpoint and from an emotional standpoint. But that said, I mean, he looks fantastic. And, you know, just the mobility is so functional. You know, you get 91 yards on the ground, but you're not really putting yourself at risk. Like, he's just like, it's almost like an Alex Smith with better arm talent and, you know, hyper speed. It's a really entertaining guy to watch. And this offense, I think, is going to continue to get more fun as we go along.
Speaking of fun offenses, very excited for topic number three. Cam Newton led the New England Patriots to an opening day victory, which is still a very weird sentence to say out loud. The Patriots downed the Miami Dolphins with a 2-1 run-to-pass ratio. Newton added a pair of touchdowns and hit little Julian Edelman with a pass so hard we thought he might explode. What was your big takeaway from a weird day in Foxborough?
That was my favorite topic that I've ever written.
I was
the first pass that he threw to Julian Edelman was like Cam was waiting 86 days to throw that pass and completely uncorked like a 200 mile an hour fastball that Julian Edelman dropped. And by the way, Patriots beat writers who tweeted that the ball was thrown too hard, get real. Like, check yourself. Like, it was not. Julian Edelman, I'm sure, has access to a jugs machine like everybody else. Yes, Cam Newton's passes are going to come out a little bit faster than Tom Brady's, but that is not Cam Newton's fault. I mean, my God, it was right on the numbers. But this was, as we alluded to earlier, just a victory of game planning. And oddly, I think that Cam Newton is the quintessential Patriots quarterback, right? Because what have you in particular have always said about Bill Belichick is that he is one of the best week-to-week matchup coaches in the NFL. And Cam Newton poses an extremely dangerous matchup challenge in that he can run that Patriots offense. We saw him hit the mid-range passes, the quick slants, all that stuff that Tom Brady does with most regularity. But then you can also basically run a version of the Ravens offense. You can run a version of the Chiefs offense. You can do different things every week, and Cam has the mental capacity and the capability to handle all that, which I'm really interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, I was so excited to watch this game, and that was the biggest frustration when I realized that I didn't have Red Zone for that first hour, was I was missing all of these Patriots updates. So I was able to go back and watch some of the stuff that I missed, but then was able also to get the Red Zone soon enough to see a lot of the action in that game. And I agree, Connor, it was just so weird. Everything from seeing Cam show up to Gillette Stadium to, you know, seeing him communicate with Josh McDaniels, that might have been the weirdest thing. Yeah. Like seeing Josh McDaniels collaborating with his quarterback and having it not be Brady was just like a jarring sight. But it was such a cool unveiling. There was so much anticipation behind it. I will say I am surprised that the Dolphins didn't sell out more to stop Cam from rushing, because wouldn't the bigger question be throwing, given some of the injuries he's had over the last few years? So why wouldn't you go all in to make sure he couldn't get two rushing touchdowns on you?
No question. I mean, basically two instances of design quarterback powers, you know, and you lost contain on the edge, which was, I mean, that you spent all the money to bolster the edge, you know, and that's what you, you know, were working on this offseason. And again, to your point, I mean, Cam Newton's arm and the Patriots weapon set was always kind of these two big question marks. And so why don't you double down on that? But I thought it was interesting that, Julian Edelman looked comfortable for the most part there. And the Patriots, because of Cam Newton now, can do a lot of different things formationally. Like they were trying to get N'Keal Harry the ball out of the backfield to try to get him some touches, which I thought was interesting. But just the optics of New England running like an RPO or like a zone read. It was like when we saw Daniel Jones take over for Eli Manning and there was a mobility aspect there. You were like, oh my God, it's something that, think about it. If you're a 20-year-old in Massachusetts, a Patriots fan, you have not seen an executed zone read in your entire life by your favorite football team. Like that's crazy. And Sunday must have felt like an entirely different world for you.
It must be exciting for Josh McDaniels to have this whole opportunities opened up to him that he didn't have previously, and to be able to really fully take advantage of all of the offensive trends that have happened over the last 20 years. And of course, they did a lot of creative things with Brady, but the last year or two in particular, and we'll get into this a little bit later, I think obviously there were clear limitations, and it was frustrating watching that offense at times because there were just things that they couldn't do. So I think it was a neat refresh. And as we referenced earlier, the Patriots found a way to make it work with a new quarterback that they did not sign until very late in the offseason. So as for that being an excuse for other teams breaking in a new head coach or a quarterback, this is, again, why the Patriots are, that's why they have the reputation they do. That's why they win games.
Josh McDaniels looked so free and breezy on the sidelines. Like he had the hair swooping up, you know.
I noticed
just like big time vacation dad energy, you know.
And a lot of new looks around the league, I will say. You know, we were texting about some of them in our group chat. We don't have to share all of them, but there were just like a lot of changes when you don't really see people for a long time, and we didn't even have preseason games to get used to some of these new looks, you know.
It's like the summer between eighth grade and freshman year of high school when just everything, you know, everything changes, and you know, you're just totally blown away. One other point on that is that to the Boston media, Tom Brady has worn things that looked so much more ridiculous than what Cam Newton wore on Sunday. So please keep that in mind. Like, yes, it is going to look different to see him arrive at games, but like, keep in mind that like, there was the long hair Tom Brady phase. There was like that Euro model Tom Brady phase. Like, there was a lot of weird stuff going on here. So a mustard yellow suit is not like out of this world. You know what I'm saying? This is just, I think, it was a good looking suit. It was totally fine.
Yeah, it was fun. I thought it was a fun way to start the season.
I did totally agree. Speaking of fellow Patriots legends. You know, we just got done talking about Cam Newton. Fellow Patriot Hall of Famer, future Patriot Hall of Famer Tom Brady, struggled mightily in his Tampa debut. The Buccaneers were throttled by the Saints. Brady threw two interceptions, one of which was returned for a touchdown, and head coach Bruce Arians blamed both of them on the mid-40s man under center. Is this very bad, or was just this just an unfortunate opponent for the Buccaneers to start with? And I will ask you, since you are the author of the Johnny Foxborough story, do you think this is Tom also allowing Bruce Arians to treat him this way and go public by saying both of the picks were his fault? Because I thought about that immediately when he said that.
That's interesting. I would have said that if not for the fact that Arians did this with Jameis, too. He would routinely parse out how many interceptions were Jameis's fault, right? Mm-hmm. There was a headline at the combine, right? Like, of 30 interceptions, like 23 were Winston's fault. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I remember reading that headline. So this does seem to be something that Arians does. So it's fine. Like, I don't think there's a problem putting it on your future Hall of Fame quarterback as you're trying to build the team, but the way that some of his quotes came out made it seem like he was a little bit surprised by the result. Like, there was the one quote, he looked like Tom Brady in practice all the time. So it's kind of unusual to see that in a ball game because they didn't do things that we didn't get ready for. Everything they did, we thought we were ready for. So it wasn't so much assigning the blame. It was also this uncertainty or not full confidence, perhaps.
It was so strange. I mean, you know, and it's certainly hard to get a feel for body language when the coach is wearing a mask, so you don't really know. But afterwards, I mean, certainly what he said spoke for itself. But during the game even, you know, we saw more of what we saw of the last 3 years. I think what was the stat that in Tom Brady's now his last four games he's thrown a pick six?
Or three games, I
last
think.
Last three, yeah.
Week 17, the playoffs game, and then Sunday.
Yeah. And so, and there was that, like, dull, like, you know, sort of, I don't know what else to do look on his face in the fourth quarter, you know, like that, you know, that fire that we saw in that first drive, it all kind of faded away. And I don't know, it's just weird. And it's hard to not make too much of it, but at the same time, it's weird to feel like we can't make too much, you know, can't make too much of it because that was significant. I mean, he looked like he did with the Patriots. And Mike Evans, you only got the ball to once, I think, and targeted him four times. There was basically one vertical attempt, which is not what Bruce Arians likes to do. And so it was all just very strange and disjointed.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we had a great email from one of our listeners, David, asking why we were kind of low on the Bucs. And I think it's exactly what you just described, Connor. It's that Brady isn't picking up off a season where he lit things on fire, right? There were a lot of frustrating moments. We saw Tom Brady that didn't look like the Brady we were used to seeing. There were throws he was missing, throws he couldn't make. So I think some of the hesitations for the Buccaneers was, is he just all of a sudden going to be that much better in a new environment? Like, it's natural that your skills decline with age, and we did see that beginning at the end of his tenure in Foxborough. So I think it was hard to imagine that wouldn't continue. And again, one game doesn't say everything. Perhaps he'll be extra motivated. Perhaps they'll make a lot of fixes this week and the Buccaneers will light things up next week. But it's at the least a reason to justify some of the skepticism that all of a sudden this dream team would storm the NFC South.
Who is more likely to be in the NFL in 2 years, Tom Brady or John Gruden?
Wow. That's a good question, Connor. I would say John Gruden.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Mark Davis is so committed to him.
But, like, I was just thinking, like, you know, he signed the 2-year deal. I imagine it's not simple for them to get out of at this point, the Buccaneers. So you're really looking at, you know, your near future here, too. And, I mean, gosh, what do you do? I mean, this is another good quarterback draft coming, and there's just going to be a lot of strange situations here. I think that, you know, listening to Arians, like you said, he's an honest guy. You know, he's going to tell it like it is, and that's going to be interesting going forward, because I think Tom thought that maybe going down there, you're not going to get as much of that. You know, you're not going to get have to be treated the way that you did in New England. But man, if they're not winning games, but like you said, let's wait and see. Carolina and Denver coming, like those are winnable games, I feel like.
Yeah, but it is interesting. And also just the factor of the success in New England, or one factor in the success that he had in New England, being that he was in this consistent offense, that he was working with people for a very long time. And so you begin a new working relationship in the middle of the pandemic. His working relationship with Bruce Arians on day one is not going to be anything close to what it was with Josh McDaniels, who he spent years with, right? So can that be something that you can get up to speed over the course of a season? I don't know. I think it will improve through the course of a season, but how much and how quickly is the question.
Did it look more to you like the Buccaneers running the Patriots offense or Tom Brady running a Bruce Arians offense on Sunday?
That's a good question.
Like,
I need to think about this.
It felt more like, I mean, and it's wrong to call every quick slant, a 5-yard quick slant,
right,
a Patriots play,
those,
right?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, but the dink and dunk type approach that he did in New England, right?
Yeah, it just felt like there was such a strain on the deep balls, and you could like kind of feel him winding up on those, and it's just, I don't know, we're just so used to hyper-vertical, even with Carson Palmer in his late 30s, you know? It wasn't like Bruce Arians doesn't have experience with quarterbacks of this age, you know? So it's interesting what... It's interesting. I don't know.
I know what you're asking. Like, is that ultimately a good marriage for a coach that wants to constantly have the deep threat available? Is Brady the right fit for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Wonder if to be a fly in the wall in, say, the Mike Evans household today, you know?
Would be an interesting conversation.
Yeah. All right. What do we have for number five?
Number one pick, Joe Burrow, lost his NFL debut 16-13 to the Chargers of Los Angeles. The Heisman Trophy winner got his team to within sniffing distance of a game-winning touchdown before his coach ordered the chicken salad for dinner and attempted to tie the game instead of giving his new star a chance to win it. What did you make of the debut?
Zach Taylor, like, he completed a touchdown to A.J. Green to win the game. A.J. Green gets called for pushing off. On that drive, Burrow was on fire. Like, and then you had time for one more pass. And instead, you go with the kicker, and the whole thing was just uninspiring. It's not like, you know, I understand Zach Taylor's rationale there. Maybe because Joe Burrow was playing so well, you take your chances in overtime, but you're not winning the AFC North this year. Like, let's let it rip, you know, put the ball in his hands and let him go win it, you know?
That drive was remarkable. Mm-hmm. Even though it ended up in a loss, even though there was the heartbreaking missed field goal for the Bengals, I mean, you can't be anything but excited for Joe Burrow if you're a Bengals fan. To see a rookie quarterback with no offense come in and be able to march the ball down the field in a very stressful two-minute situation, that was masterful. Like, he didn't look like a rookie at all.
No. And did they say that he was not? I might have misheard this, so anyone out there listening, too, feel free to correct me. But he was not wearing a wristband either.
I heard he doesn't wear
a play wristband, which is crazy. Like, he's already memorized like the 2 minute and is comfortable enough with no preseason to run that is wicked impressive.
Yeah, I just thought there was just so much to be excited about, and the way that he used his legs seemed to catch the Chargers off guard with his mobility, which was a little surprising that they were caught off guard by that, because, you know, that was an established part of his skill set, maybe not to the degree of some other quarterbacks. But anyways, I'm looking forward to watching this season. Like, the fact that we were glued to the TV for a week one Chargers Bengals matchup is all the information you need about what a game changer Joe Burrow is for the NFL.
Yeah, I think he'll be good there. And the offensive line needs to get better. You saw, his time with Joe Brady at LSU, they ran so many RPOs, and then they ran one on the second drive. And, you know, I could be totally wrong here, but it looked like they just take so long to develop, or long enough that the offensive line just couldn't hold the Chargers, you know. So you're basically running a little bit more of a standard offense where you're trying to get rid of the ball quicker. You can't do some of the things that Burrow does better than any other quarterback, but still, I mean, like, to your point on that last drive, it's like there was the false start that pushed them back, and then he completes a pass after that. There were like a bunch of mistakes that were not his fault on that drive, but he's still pushing forward and completing passes. I think that the Bengals are in for maybe not a good season. You know, I was chided for putting them at 2-14 in my preseason predictions. I heard some people say that they're going to go 7-9, which I don't think is necessarily true. But I think that this is maybe a solid 4-5 win football team at this point. And Joe Burrow with maybe a fast track for offensive rookie of the year based on at least what we saw yesterday.
Yeah, and to follow up on the point that I was referencing earlier, the quote post-game from Anthony Lynn was that he said he thought to himself, we're going to have to be careful with what coverages we get in. If we leave the middle of the field open, he can take advantage of that. That was obviously after the touchdown that Burrow ran in. So here you have it, a rookie quarterback causing an opponent to adjust their defensive scheme in-game. I mean, that's a major deal.
It is. And I don't know, it may be slightly, even though we had our fun with Zach Taylor on the topic, maybe slightly changed my thought process on him a little bit. Like, I think he called a good game. And I just think that they need to get so much better. I mean, that offensive line was just ragdolled. And the Chargers defense is going to be one of the better set of pass rushers that they're going to face all season. But, you know, I'm more hopeful maybe if I'm a Bengals fan today than I have been in maybe 3 or 4 years, you know, which is good. So that's a positive.
Yeah, I agree, Connor. All very well said.
So I'm going to switch it up on you. I decided on an Oracle that I like a little bit better. Although I was okay. Very vague. I was very vague in the topics anyway, and I just wrote
Cam. It was
Cam.
A single word, Cam.
But instead, I'll change that to Mitch. And I think that the Oracle is, I'm predicting that the Bears go on a little run here. I think that the Bears make it to 4-0. They have a little bit of a soft spot in their schedule here coming up. And I'm going to look up their opponents right now. But to our we said in a podcast a few weeks ago how difficult it is for someone like Mitch, who you can kind of read his personality and see what kind of guy he is, to bounce back from everything. And yes, he did not play phenomenally on Sunday, probably not even up to the point where the numbers suggest that good. But to have the uneven throws, the uneven games, the fact that the team goes out and gets Nick Foles and pays a boatload of money for him in the offseason, and then with the game on the line, you complete a dime to beat the Lions. Like, I think good for him. I mean, you know, this guy gets banged all the time, and it must be somewhat difficult as being an NFL quarterback can be. But from an emotional perspective, that's not an easy town to succeed in. There's a lot of attention on you, but I was, you know, you have to be impressed a little bit with what he was able to do late in the game on Sunday.
Yeah, with the game on the line, I have to say I was really happy for him. There's been a lot of criticism. He's become the butt of a joke. I mean, we are also skeptical that he was going to be able to have any success this season as a starter. But he was pretty honest in an interview with Peter King in his Football Morning in America column. I don't know if you saw those quotes. You can't go back to that dark place. You can't go back to my stats aren't any good. It's happening again. At times like that, I find myself focusing on my teammates, the guys you grind with. Our relationships run deep. We lean on each other. And I think you've got to believe in yourself, believe you can do it. There's still time. I don't know, Connor. I've really related to those words. I feel all the time like I'm terrible at this job. I can't do
100%.
It. You know, you get really down on yourself. You see praise that others are getting. You wonder what you're doing wrong. And I think everyone can relate on some level to what he's saying there, is that you have to kind of just steel yourself off and keep going. And so you know, I was really happy for him to have the kind of result that he did at the end of the game. And yeah, it was certainly a stunner for Detroit. That's a topic for another day.
Yeah, but it is true. He's sort of become like the human embodiment of, like, you know, I've sort of placed my own anxiety on Mitch Trubisky, you know what I mean? And it's just like, oh, like, I know exactly what you're going through, buddy. You know, sometimes right. you watch those games and you're like, you know, maybe being a sports writer is not the perfect parallel, but we feel it, you know, and even in your own life, you know, whatever, anytime that stuff happens. But now you get that gutsy win against Detroit. And then next weekend you face the Giants, which a team that, again, we're going to see for the first time in about 3 hours, 3.5 hours, which I'm very excited about, getting tacos for dinner. Going to watch the Giants. But I think that on paper, they have one of the worst secondaries, if not the worst secondary in the NFL. And they lost their first round draft pick cornerback and had to cut him. So they have the Giants next, the Falcons, a team that gave up like 400 passing yards to Russell Wilson in the opener, mm-hmm. then the Colts, a team that just got diced up by Gardner Minshew. And then, you know, and then you have the Buccaneers. And I think that's a better defense there. But those are three very, very, very winnable games coming up there.
Yeah.
Interesting. The Mitch Renaissance.
Yeah, well, at first I thought you were referring to Mitch Golditch, our MMQB editor.
Well, big day for Mitch, too, yeah. And congratulations to editor Mitch, who coined the phrase the octopus, which is an octopus is when you score the touchdown and also the two-point conversion. I believe it's become a little bit of a pop culture phenomenon, you could say, and then made its way to Red Zone. So
yeah.
Super proud of Mitch, who loves the octopus. I got Mitch an octopus for Christmas last year, and puts a lot of work in on the octopus. So good for you, Mitch.
Very exciting to be watching the Red Zone. I just happened to hear Scott Hansen mention it. Really happy that I got Red Zone figured out in time to catch that reference for Mitch.
No doubt.
All right, on to the Rentis consensus, Connor. Here's what I have this week. For those of us who have not been using the Washington former mascot for years, the racist mascot that was stricken from the team name this summer, for years we have not been using it on this podcast, in our writing, etc. You can just say Washington.
Yeah.
You don't have to make a joke out of, oh, their football team. That became one of the most used jokes on Sunday, and I was hearing on all the channels, oh, the football team. No, you can just say Washington. It's really actually not that hard for there not to be a mascot. You just say the team name like you would in any other situation. It's Washington. Washington scored a touchdown. Washington surprised the Eagles. Washington led a comeback. Even if you're using Eagles, you can still use Washington. You don't have to match it.
It's such a good point. And it's like, you know, the argument that I've heard is, well, you don't know what it's like when, you know, you guys write and you can think about your sentences and we have to say it on TV. Untrue. You know, we've been in the industry in different forms and pockets. I've written updates for radio stations. I've read updates on radio stations. You can just, you know, it's Washington. That's it, you know? And I think that, I think doing it the other way is almost just like sort of a sneaky wink and a nod towards like, oh, I'm basically saying the name without saying it. Like, look at me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think maybe that's a good point, Connor. I think maybe that's why it bothered me, because you're just kind of like making a joke out of the fact that they had to change their name. Well, it was a belated change. It was a horribly offensive and racist mascot that should have been changed a long time ago. So now that it's finally been changed, I'm just going to say Washington. Not going to make a joke out of calling it the football team.
And you can too.
Not you, well.
But you know,
the
royal you, everybody,
the world at large,
everybody else. Yeah, it's great point. Here's to hoping that we're all gonna do a little bit better with that. Are you gonna stay up? By the way, like what the Titans game starts late tonight. Like I don't know if I'm making it to that one. That might be an early morning game passer. You know.
Yeah, I usually have trouble on the Monday Night Football doubleheaders staying awake for the second one. So
very excited for the Giants, though.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing this matchup since our listeners will be hearing this on Tuesday after the game is already decided. You can just fast forward over this part, but should be a good matchup.
I look
forward to seeing the outcome.
By the way, before we end the show, just a thank you, because you mentioned earlier our resident Jaguars fan, Anthony. He allowed me to come back on the Jaguars bandwagon on Twitter, and he said that I never broke up with the Jaguars. He interpreted that as that the Jaguars and I were just taking a break.
You were on a break?
So we were just taking a break. So thank you, Anthony, for putting it that way. I feel whole again. So it's
On the Ross side of things. We were on a break.
Yeah. It's good. And, glad to be back. So
I'm glad to hear that. Very gracious of Anthony. And reach out anytime. We also have the email address, weeksidepod@gmail.com. And we, in season, this will be our once a week episode. It'll come out every Tuesday, so you can join us here for the duration of the season. Thank you, as always, for listening. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Rentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts by subscribing on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.